webcasting to the world.
You remember the moment you saw yourself and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for April the 14th, 2016, broadcasting from the home of Redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you from the GR Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee, where with Anton St. Martin, we say, you are a deity in jeans and a t-shirt. And within you dwells all of the infinite wisdom of the ages and the sacred creative force of all, that is, will be, and ever was. And here from Houston, Texas, is our great unteacher, the Heretic's Hope, the Preacher's Paradox, and the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. G'day, Mike. How are you?
G'day, Barris Bartlett. I am marvelous and finally getting warm here in Houston. How are you today?
Mate, I have had possibly the most outstanding week of maybe of my life. I've had several phone calls with folks, and I've been listening to those old original powercasts. I think I might have gotten saved, 10 or 20 times this week.
Isn't that marvelous?
Wonderful.
I hope that we are able to communicate to people the value of listening to things they have heard, because the fact of it is you haven't really heard it yet. Gosh, we've got folks that have reported listening to a single CD as much as 70 times, and their IQ is above 70, and they get something new out of it every time. Yeah, folks, there is a synthesis between the gospel and the soul of mankind. And boy, I tell you, I don't understand it, but Barris, you know it's true. You just said it. You got saved several times listening to your own powercast. And we obviously know what was said because we said it and or we listened to it, or at least I think you were listening to me. I'm not sure. Sometime,
just because I'm looking at you, you should never draw a conclusion.
Yes, I should not assume, should I?
You shouldn't. Well, not with me. With most people, you can. But I learned years ago to look intelligent with nothing else happening in my brain.
Well, the thing of it is, you could look right at me, but you're doing the gardening out in your greenhouse at the same time somewhere in that brain. Right.
That's a very nice way to put that. I could be doing many
things. I could have
gone
a lot of places, but I went with the gardening greenhouse. See, I are nice, aren't I?
Now, mate, we are in the middle of our spring pledge drive.
We are indeed, Barris. This really could be the most important pledge drive that we have ever had. This pledge drive is vitally important because this is going to set the tone for what we actually are able to accomplish with funds that we don't have to borrow, funds that we don't have to put on a credit card, funds that come into a balanced budget where the debts have been paid. So now, I know that telling people we're in debt and you got to help us, that don't work anyway, because we tried that for years when we were in debt. So we've got the good news to let you know that we're not in debt. And not only are we not in debt, we do not have a savings account yet. But I have taken Al Vitale's advice, and he is we've talked before, and he is a good businessman. He's told us we need $20,000 in reserve for emergencies. So we'd like to do that. We'd like to become that, not just solvent, but prepared also. We just paid for the new website that everybody is seeing. And what a wonderful advancement of the gospel revolution. And that is all paid for. And we didn't put it on a credit card, you know.
And we've also outlaid for a new PC for Jeff Robertson down there, who does, I mean, without him, if anyone's going to get a new PC right now, it's going to be him.
That's got to be Jeff.
We can't get one for Hazel because we'd have to teach how to use it, and that just ain't going to happen, I don't think.
Well, it would stay in the box. That's just all there is to it. Yeah, folks, this is an exciting time in the gospel revolution. We stand in a very unique position, folks. Sometimes in the gospel revolution, it feels as though that we're standing there holding onto the helm of a ship that is being pushed from every side of every doctrine in the world. And all we're saying is the scriptures are real. We accept them. Not that we understand all of them. We are going to stick with the scriptures. I can't get around Jesus saying that the scriptures, these are the things that speak of him. And so we stick with it. And when we don't understand something in the scriptures, we say, well, I'll understand it one day, or I'll say, I don't understand. But so far, we've got such a body of work that has developed over more than 30 years of the gospel revolution, all subject to the scrutiny of the scriptures. And please question us about everything, because sometimes we miss something. We're not standing here telling you we know everything. So, yes, this pledge drive is very important. Jeff's trying to call you. Now, I know that you heard the phone ringing, and I know you thought, well, I'll give him a call back. But you know that you're going to forget. So next time you hear, because there will be a next time. He's not going to give up just because you didn't answer.
Mate, he is like, I've never seen him quite like, tenacious doesn't even begin. You know, he reminds me of the words of Churchill when Churchill addressed the Congress, American Congress, and he said, Churchill said, they said they would wring our neck like a chicken. Some neck, some chicken.
Exactly. And sometime you're going to hear him because he's talking so much. He's going to sound like his neck has been wrung like a chicken, and he may not even be able to talk when he calls you, but he is going to call you. So if you pick up the phone and there's silence, just say, hey, Jeff, here's my credit card. Take my money.
So what's our goal?
Well, if we raise $10,000 in this pledge drive, you know, we really want to support people in what they do. I got a call from our friend Derek, who is a new gospel revolutionary. He called me. We spent about 2 hours on the phone. I was explaining to him, I said, you know, you've not come to something that you have to learn how to serve and how to be there for and work for. I said, you've come to something that we're learning how to serve you, how to be there for you, and how to work for you. And you didn't come to support what we do. We've come to support what you do. And believe me, you're going to be hearing from Derek, and the whole planet's going to hear from this young man.
I believe that. A very intelligent, very logical young man.
Oh, and incredibly so.
And nice with it, too.
Yeah, all that in a bag of chips. You're going to be hearing from Derek. He's up in New Hampshire, he and his wife and children. And we want to get an interview with him as soon as we possibly can. And he's writing a book 6 months into the gospel revolution, and he's writing a book. Yay! I told Derek that I fully expect that his book will be better than mine. I fully expect him to understand this better than I do. I fully expect him to do more with it than I have, because that is our template for sharing and promoting the gospel, is that we put our wholehearted support into those who are listening, who want to do something. Folks, all you got to do is tell us what you want to do, and we will put our support behind you. Jackie Bernard has his own website now, and I went on to Jackie's website, and it is beautiful. My goodness, and it is Jackie. You can see Jackie in the website. The way he thinks is in the website. His personality is in the website. I don't know how he developed this, but Jackie, you certainly accomplished putting yourself into this site. So we promote that. Mm. We want people to go to Jackie's website. And Bears, we need to make sure that we publish the address. I made a comment on one of his, he's got several articles on there with a place where you can leave a comment on each and every article.
Mm-hmm.
So I read through one of them and I left a comment. I'm going to go back and read some more and make some comments about those also. And we really encourage you guys to get to Jackie's website.
The website address is www.theunknownbible.com. Theunknownbible.com.
Mm. Jackie is our poet of the gospel revolution. And so this is very poetic website. It's got Jackie Barnard written all over it. So the heart of Jackie is in this. And you will enjoy it. Go on there. Read the articles. Don't just read the articles. Do a post. Post what you think about each and every article as you go through there. We love these guys, and we want to support them in what they're doing. Now, Barris, we've been into the pledge drive several days now, and we want to hear from Jeff Robertson to see how things are going. Jeff, do you have any good news for us?
Well, thanks, Mike. We are now 4 days into our spring pledge drive, and we have a few donations to start off with, and quite a few people who aren't answering their phone, but let me tell you who has answered so far. We got Dale Van Sickle, and he's in Lady Lake, Florida, and then Brad and Holly Wilson in Queen Creek, Arizona, Pastor Ted Winsett in Decatur, Alabama, John Dalida in Elmer, New Jersey, Pastor Pat Winsett in Decatur, Alabama, Richard and Pat Salonen in Laurium, Michigan. I never know how to pronounce that. And then Walter Wilson in Selma, Alabama, and Grant Miller in North Manchester, Indiana. So those are the people who have given thus far in the past 4 days, and I'm looking forward to talking to the people who haven't answered, and I still have more people to call besides. So we're off to a pretty decent start for just first few days in, and I'd also like to talk about our new website and the iTunes subscription. We are now on the iTunes store for those of you who are iTunes listeners, and we are also now approved in Google Play Music. So we have listings with both. So I want you to know that if you are subscribed to us through the Podbean website, as of May 1st, that subscription feed will no longer be available. So please, while it's still April, right now if you can, just go to gospelrevolution.com or go to iTunes, search Gospel Revolution, the words Gospel Revolution, and subscribe to our new subscription feed. We have a new listing on iTunes. You'll see it because it's no longer, you'll probably see the Podbean listing too, but you're also going to see our new one. Please subscribe to the new listing because the Podbean listing will not be available after April. And it's back to you, Barris.
Wow. Well, what do you make of that, Michael?
Well, Barris, we appreciate everybody that has been involved so far. And we know that others are making up their mind about these things. Goodness, we've always had just the most faithful group. They have absolutely... And we're going to say this every week about the pledge drive. You have only one reason to give into the gospel revolution. We've taken every hook out of this. We don't try to bribe you. We don't try to twist your arm. We don't try to bless you. We don't try to get you to get the curse off your house or nothing. Nothing. But if you gave, those of you that gave, I know why you gave. It's because you care about other people. You know the saving power of the soul that this gospel has. You know what it's done for your life, and you want that to happen to others. Our goal is to reach 1 billion people with the gospel before I step off the earth. Well, I don't even know that I'm going to step off the earth anymore. So, but I'll be hanging around in some other form maybe. But heaven is definitely my home, and I want to make sure before I make any transition that we've reached as many people as possible. So, folks, help us. This is a very, very special pledge drive, and we really would appreciate all of your help, as we always do. Let's do this for others.
This week, Michael, we heard from Bernie Rouse, and he said, "Hi, guys, I've got a question. Now, family, be aware that over the next month or so, we will be running behind a week. We're running ahead a week. Michael and I are recording these a week earlier than you're going to hear them, a week and a half, actually, earlier than you're going to hear them. There is a good reason for that, but right now, that's just the way it's happening. So if you don't think we've answered your email, wait for a week. And if you still don't think we've answered your email,
wait for another week.
Well, I was going to say call us, and we'll put it right. Bernie Rouse says, "Hi, guys, I have a question. We know Jesus died for the sin of the world, but is it correct to think that he died for the sins of the nation of Israel?" Hebrews 9:15. Bernie, you had to spoil. It was a pretty decent question. We could have made up an answer. Now you got to take us to Hebrews 9:15, which says, "And for this cause, Jesus Christ is the mediator of the New Testament, that by means of death for the redemption of the transgressions that were under the First Testament, they which are called might receive the promise of eternal inheritance." Now, there's a few twists in this little thing.
Well, there is. Yeah.
So I'm just going to repeat his question. He distinguishes here. He says, "We know that Jesus died for the sin of the world, but is it correct to think that he died for the sins of the nation of Israel?"
Yes, we do know that Jesus died for the sin of the world. Now, my take on it, Barris, is that what happened to Jesus on the cross was not for the sins of the nation of Israel, but it was to take away the law. Now, you'd say, "Well, I thought he had to forgive the sins of the nation." Well, if you take the law away, there's no need for anything. I guess you could say it's done simultaneously. So this is not a forgiveness of sins at the cross. In other words, that has to be repeated. The reason it doesn't have to be repeated is because it was the law that was given to Israel that was obliterated. Now, we know, though, that even though he dealt with the nation of Israel as those on the stage, if you will, but the whole issue was never about the transgressions of the law. The transgressions of the law was to reveal the transgression of the human race. And in that revelation that the law was supposed to give by pointing out specific sins, It was not because that these things, in many cases, that they were so horrible, like sewing two opposite pieces of cloth together or eating shellfish. It's not that all of them were such horrible transgressions. It was, honestly, to make everything a sin so that the human race or the nation of Israel could come to the conclusion that, "Wow, It's not me that really sins, but sin that dwelleth in me. And that's what Paul said that the law led him to a conclusion of. Now, that's not a post-cross revelation that Paul got. Paul's talking about his progression into understanding, and that that what the law, as the human race is supposed to do, or the law as the nation of Israel is supposed to do, is get a revelation. Get a revelation about the sin of the whole world, which is what Jesus earnestly died for. So, you know, I used to really be tormented because the Baptist Church told me that Jesus died because of this sin, that sin, and this sin. And they were sins I didn't know how to correct. So every time I was caught, quote, in this sin, they told me I was crucifying Jesus over and over again. So the question is, it's a good place for us to bring up such things that have really tormented the human race, tormented a lot of Baptists, I can tell you that, because I was a young Baptist boy. And this is what I was told. I know that Catholic folks are told the same thing. I don't know about all of the denominations exactly how they deal with it, but what I would say is that Jesus died for the sin of the world, and he removed the law off of the nation of Israel.
As I've said before, and I think it's become my fixed position, there are three things that happened at the cross. One is that the imputation of sin on the whole human race was replaced by an imputation of righteousness, Romans 5, verse 18. The problem that was particular and confined to Israel was that they had not only been given the law, but welcomed it and said with open arms, they said, "This shall be unto us our righteousness," when Moses brought it down from the mountain. And as Hebrews 9:15 says, Jesus died for the trespasses or the sins under the first testament. Now, there were no Gentiles. I was never a Jew as far as I know, and therefore that's why the law, I mean, on a couple of levels, doesn't even apply to me. Not only did Jesus take the law out of the way, but even if I'd been around before the cross, the law had still not been given to me.
Right.
Eating shellfish for me was not a sin. It was not a breaking of the law. And I love what you just said, Michael, that rather than taking the sins away, you took away. And John the Baptist said, "Behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world." He couldn't actually even see what was how the whole thing was going to work. Little did he figure that this man standing before him was going to take away the whole law in which this man was raised and in which his daddy, Zacharias, was a priest. So that's the second thing that happened. So the imputation of righteousness on the whole world replaced the imputation of sin. As far as the 6% of the world being Judaism was concerned, whatever the law had brought upon them, Jesus took it off them by removing the law. And the third thing, of course, is that, as Paul says in Ephesians, he broke down the middle wall of partition between Jews and Gentiles. Right. How did he do that? By simply incorporating the whole world into himself in the form of a new creation. That's the third thing he did. Number one, the imputation of sin on the world removed. Imputation of righteousness replaced it. Number two, whatever the problems were that the Jews had because they were in particular given the law, that was removed. Number three, a new creation.
That's good gospel, brother.
Well, it's the only way I can remember it. I got to always reduce it down to something just like that. This week we got an email from Wayne and Jan Card. Now, Wayne was in touch with us quite a bit recently, and then we didn't hear from him. Isn't that funny? People come in waves. I like it. I really enjoy it. It's once it was the three Dannies, and now it is Derek, and here is Wayne. He says, "Hi, Mike and Barris. I'm curious about your opinion as to Paul's directives to assembled groups. I don't believe in the need for structured assemblies, but for those who do meet, should Paul's advice be taken with a grain of salt given the culture at the time?" In parenthesis, he says, "long hair on men and also women not speaking during a meeting, for example. Also, I'm wondering about the stringent qualifications for elders, such as having basically perfect children. it seems to me that these guidelines would be tough to meet by today's elder wannabes. Then there's the husband of one wife bit. I think that it was Dr. Gene Scott who interpreted the Greek of that phrase to mean a one-woman kind of man. Yeah, and that's a great translation of that. In other words, not having roving eyes and roaming fingers. You might be right about being hard to find one of them these days, mate. What do we make, he says, of Paul's instructions to the assemblies and elders? Are they basically good guidelines to follow when possible, or do they carry more weight than that? Thanks, guys. Wayne.
Awesome. Well, first off, I remember the very first time that I was asked this question, which was probably 25 years ago, about Paul's instruction not to forsake the assembling of ourselves together. And my comment at the time was, well, based on the gospel that Paul was preaching, what was he wanting them to assemble for? He was wanting them to assemble to share and encourage each other in the gospel. And in which I made the statement, I said, if Paul walked into most of our organized Christian meetings in the world, he would, and sat and listened in on a message, he'd probably get up and say, please disassemble yourselves. Do not ever get together again.
A little assembly required.
And the other interesting thing is here we are. We're assembled, aren't we? We just assemble in a new technology, a new way. So whichever way that you might look at this, and we don't know whether you're a long-haired man or a woman who talks. We're just glad you're here, one way or the other. The instructions that Paul gives and guidelines, you know, people have struggled with them for quite some time. I'm still open to the possibility that we're just reading this wrong. Now, I've gone back and looked at it many times, but with Paul's dialectic form of teaching, we just continue to miss these things over and over. And it is sometimes difficult because Paul wrote this so difficult for us to understand, but because of our education that we've received does not prepare us to read in such a revealing way that Paul wrote, which was dialectic. And so many times, and case by case by case, all of these, we thought Paul said it this way, we find out that he was actually declaring what they already thought and was challenging those thoughts once we read it in context. For me, these verses, number one, if there are elders, if there are people, just like the gifts of the Spirit, if these things abide, they should abide in our lives on a daily basis, not within an organized structure. This should be operating at the grocery store, at the gas station, at the mall, is where these things should come out. Just in our daily lives, this is how these things should be coming out. I want to always encourage people, especially about Paul's teaching, read a little further. Read one more verse. During my conversation with Derek, we just had a powerful time, and I've got to go back now and read all of Corinthians 1 and 2.
Now, I just want to make three comments on this, if I can, mate. First, and family, you're going to hear Mike and I agree. You're going to hear us dialogue, discourse, debate, but you're going to hear us disagree, and this is one time that might happen. Don't for one moment think that we are divided about the gospel. What we are is we are exploring every possibility to see if our minds can't be strengthened by the gospel. For that word in Hebrews, forsake not the assembling of yourselves together. Remember who this book was written to? It was written to, Hebrews. What to a Hebrew mind was an assembling? There was only two kinds of assembling. There was a kind where they had a holy convocation, and which we won't go into right now. And there was the other kind, of which they had seven a year, and they were the feasts. They assembled themselves together for the Feast of the Passover, for the Feast of Tabernacles, for the Feast of Trumpets, all of these things. They gathered themselves together, and he's writing to Hebrews who have now come into the gospel, and he's saying, listen, don't give up your ethnicity. You don't have to stop celebrating your feasts, your assemblies. So don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together. And he's writing to people saying, this isn't quite what you've been told it is by the Jewish elders. I'm wanting to tell you, you are free. You're free to be Jewish. You're free to feel Jewish. You're free to think Jewish, or you're free to think like a Greek. You're free because it's for freedom that you've been set free. Second thing I want to say refers to the evolution of Paul. Let's say all of these books were written by Paul. Now, the early church moved from charismatic, meaning a flat kind of hierarchy. In early Corinthians, one brought a hymn, one brought a prayer, one brought a word of knowledge, one brought a word of wisdom. Everyone had a part to play. By the time we get to Timothy, now everyone doesn't have a part to play. Now there's elders and bishops and deacons and all kinds of things, and there is this hierarchical thing in play. Now, did Paul find that his early idea, whilst being thoroughly democratic, was unworkable? I don't know. Was it the same person who wrote both of these epistles? We don't know. That is very much in debate. But one thing we do know is that the charismatic style of assembling led to a creedal style of assembling, where in order to belong to the church, in about 300, you had to actually recite a creed. That led to a corporate style. So you went from charismatic to constructed to creedal and then to corporate when the Church of Rome finally took the reins of the whole shebang. And the last thing I want to say was the enemies of early Christianity spread rumors that they ate their babies, sacrificed their babies, had strange sex, and everything that they could say to put down that the movement of what was known as the way. It was in the interests of the church that they be as clean living as possible. It was in the interests of the church that they did not have that which people could hold against them. So that might have been another reason why these perfect children and perfect wives and only having one wife and all that, there's a lot to be considered here.
For sure. And let me concur with Barris. The number one thing that you always have to take away from these things is that they are always, number one, up to subjective view as to what this actually means and what does it mean to us now. Let me assure you one thing. Nothing in any of these things have anything to do with the gospel.
Mm.
The gospel is the gospel whether you have elders or don't have elders.
Yeah.
The gospel is the gospel whether you assemble or disassemble. The gospel is the gospel whether a man has long hair or short hair. The gospel is the gospel whether a woman talks in church or remains silent. The gospel is a powerful declaration that remains constant and the same, because it does not vary based on morality or gender. It does not vary based on color. Well, let me quote Paul. Jew or Greek, barbarian, Scythian, bond or free, we're all one. So nothing supersedes the gospel.
What you're saying, Michael, is the gospel does not revolve around the fulcrum of what we do, but of what Christ did.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why we do not... the gospel revolution does not take, number one, the New Testament as scripture. Well, number one, we don't take it as scripture because it ain't. There is absolutely nothing to affirm, confirm, infer that the New Testament is scripture whatsoever that I can find. So with that in mind, always remember that is where we hang our hat, and that is to in what Scripture is. Every denomination that is in this world has hung their hat on a New Testament verse out of context, or even in context. The issue is that's what makes a denomination. That's what divides.
What makes a denomination is not that upon which they agree.
Mm-hmm.
It's that upon which they disagree.
Yes, we're going to disagree on that, so that's going to create our church. And then the next one disagrees with that, so they create another church. But it's all based on one verse wonders. It's this captivation with one verse. And for me, it is shocking to defer to. Now, see, we've got whole churches based on how a woman and a man dress, entire denominations. It is the place where they pivot, where they view all things in the Bible from how do you dress. Believe me, I've been around a couple of these denominations, and the most important thing to spirituality is how a woman dress, how you just interviewed Grant Miller. That entire denomination is based on how you dress. And Grant and his wife and children came out of that denomination, which was one I didn't even know about, that did this very specific dress code.
Well, let's talk about that a moment, shall we?
Yes.
Can you see what I'm holding up here?
I do see it.
Live on last week's show, I actually bought this book while we were talking, while Grant and I were talking. And he calls it...
Think and Be Free.
Think and Be Free. And he calls them a plain church. It was actually a, it's got a few names, but it's a German Brethren church. And it's a little bit, it's like a second cousin to the Amish and the Mennonites. And this little book, look, it's half, not even half an inch thick. It's great read. It's a simple read. And once you read it, you'll want to give it away. Why don't you go and buy a couple of these off Amazon just to give them away? Grant Miller's book, Think and Be Free. I forget what I paid for it. It wasn't but a couple of dollars. And it's a nice little clean-looking paperback with large print for the old folks like me. I got through it pretty quickly. So go and buy that book, Grant Miller's book, Think and Be Free. Wayne Card and Jan, thanks so much for your question. Oh, appreciate God. It. You make us think. You make us strong. I really appreciate it. Also, why don't you go up onto our website, www.gospelrevolution.com, and look for the article that I put in there called Universalism, the Prevailing Doctrine of the Christian Church During Its First 500 Years. Now, this was a book written over 120 years ago, and it is out of copyright, so it's free for you to download there. You can just cut and paste straight into a Word doc. But go over to the articles down on the right side and look for Universalism, the Prevailing Doctrine of the Christian Church During Its First 500 Years. If you want to know why I am so a lover of history, this book will show you. Once, and I've never seen a better annotated book. I mean, at the bottom of every page, this guy, he acknowledges his sources, where he got it from. You can go run around, check it up. And when you find out that Universalism, as Bob Hines in his book Redemptionism, said Universalism was a prevailing doctrine of the Christian church in its first 500 years. When you realize that, I promise you one thing. You will have no more doubts about the gospel of peace and the gospel of grace.
Yeah.
This week we heard from Wayne Leese to Mike Williams, subject, An Angry God. Regarding the March 17 podcast, I think that God needed to be angry. What else could he do with his children besides destroying all of us? Just say, oh, it's okay, you murdered your brother Abel? What is anger? Wayne Leese. Now, just before I let Mike loose at this, let me remind you, Wayne, that God protected Cain. In that respect, he did say, okay, it's okay you murdered your brother Abel. Now, I know that God didn't say that, but I'm saying, fascinating that the first murderer on the face of the earth, God went and protected him.
Exactly. It's interesting about this issue of anger, which is the topic of our PowerCast and has been, and probably will be for a couple more anyway, at the rate we're going. But this issue of anger is a reaction. Jealousy is a reaction. Vengeance is a reaction to something that you're not happy with. We've been dealing with this issue for many years. But it's interesting that people find a need, I don't know what the need is yet, I'm trying to understand more, to extricate the fact that God was angry. And there's a lot of stances about how they get to that. One of these, and the reason I'm really glad that you brought this up, Wayne, it is attempted to portray that God was always angry. But you see, there was an evolution, if you will, into this anger. If somebody was misunderstanding as they wrote, even Moses, let's say Moses misunderstood God altogether. And now that's really a steep one, because we can't even go that Moses misunderstood, because it is declared that this is God speaking through Moses. So, but the fact of it is, if Moses or any writer of the Old Testament were wanting to portray God as an angry God, they'd have started in the garden. I mean, why wouldn't you start with anger after the first disobedience?
Calling the sheriffs, getting them booted out of their house, and putting a couple of angels with swords at the front gate.
Yes, but there's no mention of any anger. Even God's reasoning for keeping them out of the garden was for their sake. It was not even against them. It was not God who separated from man. It was man who attempted to hide from God. There's just so much to look at here. I'm trying to stay really hard to stay on subject so that we won't go down, because I see about 10 rabbit holes here that I would love to go down and then connect them 5 feet under. So,
and we've got another 3 emails before we even start our PowerCut.
Exactly. So this issue of anger is progressive. Nobody can take that out of the scriptures either. Whatever the mark was, it was for protection. That God said, I'm marking you so that people will know that whatever they... Now, here is a point that you can't take out. That God marked Abel for protection, but he marked him for protection so that people would know that whatever they did to Cain, God would do to them. Now, what do you call that? I don't know, but it's there.
Confusing, if you ask me.
But it's there.
And exactly. And the thing is, we either have the choice of extracting this and therefore saying, you know, playing pick and choose Bible.
So, yes, we are going to be investigating this, though, Wayne, in greater detail, because it's an important subject. But we are going to, I can tell you what the Gospel Revolution, let me say this, I can tell you what Mike Williams is going to do. Whatever the scriptures say, I'm going to accept it, because it is the same scripture that helps us understand the full work of the cross and the life, death, burial, and resurrection of Christ. If I remove the anger of God from the old covenant, then we have nothing as a firm foundation to stand on. And your New Testament verses, folks, I don't care how many of them you line up, they are not a firm foundation to stand on. They can be revealing. They can help you understand the scriptures. They can help you challenge what you think you know about the scriptures. But when you base a doctrine on a New Testament verse, you are a new denomination. There's nothing else to say about it.
While you're on our website, www.gospelrevolution.com, please watch some of Jeff Robertson's videos. You'll see them on the videos, and he has all of his old videos up there. 7,532, I think it is, except for the one that he did twice. And Have a look at them. Look, these five-minute vignettes of the gospel are just fantastic. Go listen to a movie. And while you're there, if you want to listen to the Gospel Revolution Radio 24-7, and it can be had just by clicking on a link at the top of the page. Pretty soon I will have Glenn Klein's interviews with Michael. I'll have them up, plus a couple of other interviews that'll be news to all of you. Michael, this week we got an email from Doug Salonen. And yes, we heard from Bernie Rouse, mm-hmm. and then here is another name that is linked by family, Salonen. And he says, GR, how could James get it wrong so fast? Chapter 1, verse 12. One of my friends believes he will have many crowns when he gets to heaven, literally, like stacked on his head, because he heard someone preach about all the crowns in the Bible. Blessed is the man that endures temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to them that love him.
They got it wrong real fast. Even faster than James chapter 1, verse 12, the best we can tell. They got it wrong so fast that Jesus felt the need to appear to a gentleman on the road to Damascus, and here he is sending him to understand the gospel and teaches him the gospel. There is no doubt that Paul came back with an understanding of the gospel that is completely contrary to the understanding of Peter, James, and John. They somehow came all the way through the whole thing. But we know that that started way back, even when Jesus was still with them. He asked them, why is it they had no faith, and why is it that they still didn't understand? Now, there's not a place where Jesus reversed that opinion. There's not a place recorded, at least. You might say, well, it had to happen. Well, maybe it did. But there's no place where Jesus, that I know of, reversed that opinion and said, wow, dude, you did it okay. Finally, you got it right. I'm so glad that I've been with you long enough, because his question to them was, how long will I be with you? How long is this going to take, dudes? To have such a pointed challenge to them, you would think that when they got it, he would give an affirmation of such a thing. We don't have that affirmation that they ever understood what he was really doing here, nor what he would accomplish.
Remembering James was never a part of that gang.
Very good point.
James, in fact, laughed Jesus off the face of the earth in his lifetime, and there is no record of him ever being converted either before or after the resurrection. Now, if you want to call converted, he was shoehorned into being the CEO of the followers of the church. Well, okay, he was converted, but I think people in general expect more from conversion than that.
And certainly spoke in opposition to Paul in his letter.
They didn't just get it wrong. They got it wrong, like you said, so fast.
Yeah. Way before James 1, chapter 12, even. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for that question, mate. Moving along to Jody Leese. And he writes, subject, Calgary downloads. Hey, ladies. Hang on. Sure, pet. No worries. It's okay, pet. Hey, ladies, I just wanted to let you know that I purchased the Calgary Winter Conference off the new website. Website looks great. Thank you very much, Jody. What I really wanted you to know, and by the way, if you don't understand the joke, it's an inside joke. You'll have to go back a few podcasts and pick up on it.
And it's one Barris started, so don't blame this on Jody. Barris started all this.
Sure, love. What I really wanted you to know was when I put it on my iPod, I loved the sight of the bands that are before and after your downloads. Metal bands like Five Finger Death Punch, Disturbed, Alter Bridge, and Like a Storm. I guess I really have left Christianity with a lineup like that. God, I love Freedom. I can't wait to listen to them. Thanks, Jody.
So what's he talking about? What happened with the download? I don't understand.
Is Jeff
peddling music now?
I think he is. I think he's. you better double his salary.
These bands just sound like Jeff's style. So
he's Disturbed, Like a Storm,
five-finger death punch.
Oh, boy. What have you been – what are in those cigarettes you're smoking down there, Jeff? Okay, Jody. Here is David Hensel, or Derek. And he writes, "Hey, Barris, I found the teaching you recommended on Scripture and the resurrection. I already have separately begun to heed your advice to think for myself, and it's been great so far. Mm. I am very interested in learning more about the history of Christianity. Could you recommend any sources? I'm a bit overwhelmed at where to begin. I suppose I could dive in anywhere, but guidance would be appreciated. Thanks. Hope to talk again soon. Derek from New Hampshire." Derek, I would start with that book I mentioned earlier. You can download it free from the web. I bought a hard copy from Amazon. Might have been $10 or $11 to the door. Pop up onto Amazon and buy yours. I think you can get the Kindle version, which you can read on a PC or on a tablet. You can get the Kindle version using the Kindle app for free. So here again is Derek. He says, "Hey, Barris, good night. Hey, Barris, good talk tonight. If you could send me the info for your gathering in Calgary, I'd love to."
Yeah, he's coming up.
"If I can." He's coming up from New Hampshire. Peace. Talk soon. Now, let me see. Opening the page. Gospel Revolution.
I really like what Derek is saying here in his first email to us. He's saying, "Okay, I get it. I do accept that I can think for myself, and I should, and I want to, but don't make me think by myself."
Oh, that's a great way of putting it, Michael. You don't have to think by yourself.
Yeah, you can think for yourself, but for God's sake, don't think by yourself, because you'll wind up in a cabin in the woods alone. So,
so here we are with the Calgary, Alberta Summer Conference, the Grace Conference, isn't it called?
Yes, Grace Conferences.
And that is going to be held at the Carriage House in Calgary, Alberta. Let me promise you, Derek, you won't be sorry for your book in there. And even if you don't, let me pay for your buffet lunch on the Sunday, because it's getting to be almost legendary proportions. I tell you, you will never eat better. And you can contact the Carriage House at 1-800-661-9566 and ask for the Grace Conference's special room rate. Or you can contact Jeff Robertson at our office at 321-220-4373 or speak with Victor Brennan, our man in Calgary, 403-686-0841. That's it, guys. It's going to be held on July 22 through July 24. I'll be there a day later. Michael may also be there a day early. Who knows? But that's the dates.
I'm going to be teaching Barris on the last trump, and then we're going into the scriptures and ferret out all the places where they did sound the trump. Because it's very, very interesting once you realize that the last trump was blown at the cross, then you get a complete revelation of the fulfillment. It's like the fulfillment of the feast days. There's also a fulfillment of the trumps that were blown. And, you know, Paul made it very clear that of the importance of the trump sounding in Corinthians. Remember, he said, "If the trump make an uncertain sound, how will the people know what to do?" So the sound of the trumpet was an instruction to the people. It let them know what was happening. If you might say it was their Morse code, well, now it would be their Twitter. We don't trumpet now, we Twitter. So anyway, this will be the subject that I go into, and I think that it's got a lot to reveal to us, especially about the completion of the work that Jesus did at Calvary. Not Calgary, Calvary.
At Calgary.
Oh, I knew it wouldn't take much to inspire
you. I'm just going to play that song right there. And I haven't decided what I'm teaching on there yet, but it'll be either the five Gospels or it'll be...
You can't stop thinking about the buffet to decide what you're going to be teaching on.
Man.
I'd say while you're teaching, you're thinking about the buffet. We see that distant look in your eyes, even when you're up trying to
it's
teach.
It's a glazed look of, oh, soon I'm going to.
You got, and then you run and ask them, what time did you say the buffet starts?
Gosh, we got through all the emails in an hour and 15. It'll be edited.
And it's a one-hour show.
For a one-hour show. So, Michael, this week, I believe, we're going to actually make an initial foray into this, let me see, into Exodus 19 and 20 that I think you teased us about, what, 5-6 weeks ago. So, shall we read it?
Yes, let's get started. What does it say, Maris?
I'm going to read from the King Jimmy, but we might revert to other translations on the way through if we feel they'll help. Exodus chapter 19, verse 1. In the third month, when the children of Israel were gone forth out of the land of Egypt, this is 3 months after the Egyptian army's been wiped out in the Red Sea, the same day came they into the wilderness of Sinai, for they were departed from Rephidim and were come to the desert of Sinai. They had pitched in the wilderness, and there Israel camped before the mount. I mean, that just sounds like so dry. But I think we're talking, what, how many millions of people here? 4 million? And they have pitched in the wilderness and they're camped before a mountain. And Moses, verse 3, went up unto God, and the Lord called unto him out of the mountain, thus you shall say to the house of Jacob and tell the children of Israel, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself. Now, therefore, if you will obey my voice indeed and keep my covenant, then you shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for the earth is mine.
Yeah, Bears, this is a pretty powerful declaration that you wind up with in verse 5, for all the earth is mine. Now, that's what you call a nice possessive statement. This is mine.
You don't think he's got a touch of vanity, this God?
I think he's got a touch of fact on his side.
All right.
This is mine. And this is the people who have come out of Egypt. I'm not sure just how long the trip has been, but I know that once they got to the mountain, they spent several years going round and round, evidently. They've just arrived here at Mount Sinai. This is where that Moses is going to go up the mountain and get the commandments and bring them back down. You remember in the story, he brought them down the first time and found everything kind of in disarray and threw the tablets down and broke them. Then he had to go back up to get more. Could have been there was only one commandment the first time. And then when he went back, maybe God added one. He goes, oh, yeah, I forgot this one. In verse 4, look what he says. You have seen what I did unto the Egyptians. If this is just a man's opinion, then the entire thing is just a man's opinion. So, folks, you got to settle where you're referencing. Now, it doesn't bother me. If you decide that the scriptures, that the Old Testament is just the writings of a man, that's fine. I've got, goodness gracious, I've got friends that are atheists. I've got friends that think the whole thing ought to just be burned. So it's up to you to decide where you're going to place your frame of reference for understanding truth. For me, it's served me well. It's caused me to continue to grow throughout all of these years by making my frame of reference the truth of the scriptures, the validity of scripture. Barris does a very good teaching on why we should trust in the scriptures, and I recommend that you go to our website and pick those off of there. But it's really marvelous teaching. But here we have him saying, you have seen, in verse 4, you have seen what I did unto the Egyptians. Now, God did what he did to the Egyptians before the law was ever given. Because we're at Mount Sinai right now for the law to be given. So we have God acting in an adversarial way toward the Egyptians.
Now, Michael, what we are discussing is the gospel of peace, yes?
Yes.
So we're looking at an evolution here of what God was and what God is. Yes. Is that right?
Yes. If evolution is our best word to use, then yes.
And the reason I use the word evolution is not, don't think that for a minute I'm talking about monkey to men. I'm talking about a logical progression.
Yes.
In the same way that a baby goes to being a child, goes to being a teenager, goes to being an adult.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a logical progression that we're talking about. We're not talking about any creationist versus blah, blah, blah. So now I'm seeing that he protects Cain and kills off Egyptians. Have I got that right?
Yes, in this case, yeah.
Okay.
So one of, I think, the most poignant story and the most, the story most related out of the Old Testament to the entire world has been this story about the deliverance of Israel out of the land of Egypt. Now, there is a detailed account as to what Moses said and did and proclaimed was going to happen to these people, the Egyptian nation, or to Pharaoh and all that were under him, because they would not let Israel go. Now, Bears, we could go down through a list of them, but there's some pretty perplexing things. And, you know, and I've heard some say, well, this was Moses' interpretation of what was going to happen. Folks, Moses told them what was going to happen before it happened. Not, he didn't say, oh, look at these frogs. It must be a plague.
Well,
you know.
Well, let's see what happened. The water got turned into blood. The River Nile got turned into blood.
Yes.
There was a plague of frogs. There was a plague of gnats and lice. There was a plague of flies. There was a plague against livestock. There was a plague of boils. There was a plague of hail. There was a plague of locusts. And it all topped out in, there was a plague of every younger son dying.
Yeah, death.
Yeah, death.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah, and of course that story, we remember that they had to put the blood on the doorpost for that, because that death angel was there, and that it was going to kill the firstborn if they didn't find the blood on the doorpost.
And this is memorialized to this day in Jewish families, because God said to Jews, he said, if the blood is on the posts, then I will pass over you and
yes.
go on to the next house and the next house. And so every house was sought out, and where there was no blood on the lintels and the doorposts. And this was a wonderful type of Jesus.
Exactly. And this is the picture of the gospel of peace. So here, these people have just experienced this powerful Passover. This is one of the final acts, in fact, before they cross the Red Sea. Now, when they cross the Red Sea, don't forget, they went across on dry land, and then God didn't put a barrier of water between them and the Egyptians. Yes, he could have if he'd have just turned the water sideways for, you know, a few feet. But instead, once they had crossed, God released the waters and all of the Egyptians died. Do you realize when you say that God was never angry, that you're saying that this is not even a part of understanding the gospel? You see, this Passover that took place, this is where we now understand this powerful, powerful work that blood and peace are demonstrated all the way back before they ever got to this point. So here they are. Now, and remember, just think of this. God is reminding them, you saw what I did to the Egyptians. Now, if there's not a hint of a warning in that, I'm missing it. All right. Now, you saw what I did to the Egyptians and how that I bore you up on eagle's wings. Now, I took care of you. So are we saying then that God didn't bear Israel up on eagle's wings? Because the comparison is to the destruction of the Egyptians over the salvation, if you will, of the nation of Israel here during this great escape, if you will, out of Egypt. So this is the comparison we're given. So we've already, before the law was given, we've already seen things demonstrated of God's retribution and willingness to stop somebody from imprisoning the nation of Israel. This is pretty drastic. Now, and then he says, all the earth.
After 400 years, if you don't mind.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, why was it okay to keep them for 400 years? You know? Well, you know, we always say, you know, God comes through in the very last hour. So.
And if it wasn't for the last minute, he'd get nothing done. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But the only thing we've got is the story, folks.
Can I read you verse 5?
Thou mayest.
And I want to read you, and I'm just going by Strong's here, Strong's Hebrew Dictionary. And here are the words used in Strong's Hebrew Dictionary. There's a lot of stuff added to this. Hearing intelligently, he says it twice, hearing intelligently, my voice, hearing intelligently. And yet the reason it's hard to figure this out sometimes, family, the verse reads, now therefore if you will obey, that is Hebrew word 8085, my voice, indeed, Hebrew word 8085. So this is translated two different ways. Hearing intelligently, my voice, hearing intelligently. Hedging about or protecting the covenant, mate, the covenant between us, which I'm not sure what that is because I didn't think that the law had been given yet and the covenant had been made, but that's where it goes. You will be my special wealth in the earth.
Yeah, and of course, I would assume that the covenant that he's talking about is the one that he had made with Abraham, since you said, as you pointed out, the law hadn't been given yet. But, and as Paul pointed out, that even the law that was given 400-something years later could not disannul the covenant that God gave to Israel through Abraham. So, yeah, we're off to a really great start here, Barris. Now, my temptation and Barris's is just keep going because we're right in the thick of this already.
Take a note.
And we're going to have to truncate this again. But I think it's good that we're approaching this as slowly as we have. We're approaching this almost as slowly as the nation of Israel approached Mount Sinai. So we're getting pitched, though, in this position. We're taking up our place and just seeing what it says from here. What does it look like from the foot of Mount Sinai? What does it look like looking back and knowing that God just did in the whole army of Egypt just so that you could go free? Remember, it is within recent days that they have experienced this blood on the doorpost, the very first Passover, if you will, and that they were protected from the angel of death that came through. So, folks, when you're considering the possibility that God was never angry, what we're wanting to point out here, my desire when we started this 3 weeks ago or more, is that what we wanted to do is remind ourselves of what you are dismissing, what we are dismissing, what anyone is dismissing, if you say that God was never angry. All right? So the earth is the Lord's. It all belongs to Him. And the Abrahamic covenant was already established, and we're at the foot of Mount Sinai. And God has reminded them, don't forget what I did to Egypt. And now, if you will keep my commandments, if you will do what I tell you to do, or keep my covenant. This is interesting. I almost completely, there was no commandment to keep, right?
Not that I know. No. Right.
Now therefore, if you will obey my voice and keep my covenant, then shall you be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And Barris has read to you the clearer definition of this. Now, this is very interesting what we've come to. God reminded the people to keep his covenant, not his law. Now, wouldn't it have been very easy for somebody making up this story to have said, keep my law instead?
Hmm.
But he said covenant, because God did have a covenant with Israel at this point, but there is no law yet, but we're going to learn about that.
And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. Don't forget, religion wants to downsize your expectations, outsource your thinking, and repurpose your existence. God's eternal plan, however, was just to enjoy the heck out of you and all of your uniqueness. Don't forget to visit www.thetruegospel.net and order your copy of Redemption, A Declaration for All, Not a Choice for a Few. One of the best study guides ever written to destroy forever any illusions that there is any degree of separation between God and you. If you want the quickest route between where you are now and being ravished by the oceans of grace washing all traces of self-doubt away, this is it. We run a value-for-value model here, and it costs us time, cash, and energy to research, produce, and maintain this free product. The value-for-value model is the only way we feel that we can present this gospel freely and unhindered. So, if you feel that you've received real value from this podcast, then I'm asking you to seriously consider donating towards it. Why don't you call area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeffrey Robertson about how you can participate. Or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the donate link. And remember, you can help support us in other ways than just cash. Anything you can do to help the gospel can make all the difference for somebody else just like you, starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. Perhaps you would like to invite Mike to your area. It's easier than you might think. Call our office on the number we just mentioned with details of when, where, and why, and we will do the rest. You want to leave a message for Mike or question for him to answer? Dial area code 234-564-0971. Leave us a voicemail. You can find us on Facebook at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. And thanks to Marcel Rose in the Netherlands, all the gospel all the time is being 24/7 broadcast at gospelrevolution.com. So now it's good night from myself, Barry Sparta, from the GR Studios right here in Music City, USA, Nashville, Tennessee. And
it is good night from Michael Williams right here in Houston, Texas. Thank you guys for going on this journey with us. And we're going to follow the progression of this story, because it is the story of the good news of the gospel of peace. We love you. Hang in there and hang on, because we're in for a wild ride.
We hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended doesn't mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, then join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
Better.